Oh, hey there, everyone. Future Bob here. This episode's a bit rough around the edges. We had a lot of technical difficulties at the studio this evening, and we were fighting gremlins throughout the entire broadcast. Despite everything, Amelia is an amazing guest, and I hope you guys enjoy the interview we had with her. Just know if this is your first time listening to Bob After Dark, that not all of our episodes end up coming out like this. So enjoy Bob After Dark meets Amelia Cotter.
Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever not cape wearing tonight, and we were running through tech issues, yeah. So I'll forgive them. The heartthrob of Bob After Dark, the Jonathan Taylor Thomas, if you will.
There you go.
Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. Let me just switch figures right there. Yes. You know, when there's tech issues that arise, we got to take off the capes, roll up our sleeves, and get our hands dirty. And that's what we did tonight here. And we're up and running. Again, thanks for Chuck and Adriana for taking our calls there earlier. But you know what? Again, Bob, this is not pretty. This is not podcasting. This is live, local AM radio.
I will be fixing most of this in post for the podcast version.
No,
but
you should leave it all.
Oh, yeah. Let me just leave the 5 minutes of just me and you bantering back and forth on why Zoom wasn't working.
But that's what AM radio is all about. We are AM radio first.
Before we dive into our guest, Count Panic, a quick weekend update from you. What's been going on?
You know what? Had a good weekend, Bob. You know, of course, Mother's Day weekend. So all the belated wishes to all the mothers out there that listen to Bob After Dark. But yeah, it was very nice. And again, thank you all to people in the chat. Vixis is in the chat as well. Spooky Aunt Mimi is in the chat as well, says Amelia.
Oh, boy.
Do you know Spooky Aunt Mimi?
I do.
We could get into that later. But Bob, how was your weekend?
Can we turn up her Zoom a little bit?
Yeah, I could turn it up. It might just be your headset there, but go ahead.
Okay, perfect. Excellent. So, and I'll give you my quick weekend update. This weekend, I was at the Wisconsin CapsCon, which is Cryptids and Paranormal Phenomena Con, hosted by our pal Barnaby Jones. I was up there speaking about the Lake Michigan Mothman phenomenon, and I had a little booth set up there for vending. So that's pretty cool stuff. It was a good time. So shout out to all the new fans that have come on over from that convention that dropped by the booth and grabbed a card. So hello, everybody. And it's good to be back home before I leave again in a couple days for another convention.
You're making towns there, Bob.
Making towns, as you say.
You've also been making more shows on WJLB. Was this true? You were on the morning show.
I was on the morning show yesterday, which I had no business being on. I woke up at bright early at 6:30 in the morning, got here for the morning show, and I was joined by, you know, some actual like major politicians in the area.
Yeah. Well, Chuck Pullen was there.
And right? I had to sit down and talk about the UFO alien files that have been released over the weekend. So that was
how did that go? Was it?
I didn't swear on the morning show for a change, so that worked out.
Last time we were on, Bob, you it was I 7 years ago.
I forgot I swore.
You cussed on the morning show.
But I cussed.
You never cussed on this show, a nighttime show, and you cussed on the
morning
show.
No, but we talked about some interesting topics over the years.
No, but you know what? That's good. You know, and that's actually, I know we're getting to other stuff here, but that's really taking kind of the people by storm. Is they always do this. They always drop UFO knowledge around sometimes.
Absolutely.
We all go crazy.
Well, it's good to be here, and we'll talk more about that coming up as more of those files are sifted through and more news comes out. I will make sure to keep the news broken. But in the meantime, Count Panic, we have a guest this week.
We do, and I'm going to try to figure this out here, Bob. I'm working on getting the cameras. We could hear her, though, so go
That's
ahead.
That's the important thing. While you're working on that, you could always text the studio engineer and see if they can get that
Quick call. Turn my mic
Just
off.
Don't close the Zoom call.
No, I'm just turning my mic. I'm turning my mic off.
No problem. All right, joining us all the way from, I'm not exactly sure where, but the wonderful author slash talking head on TV, we have the brilliant Amelia Cotter on the phone. Hello, Amelia. How are you this evening?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing well. That sounded a bit rough there, Count.
I'm not going to move that. Go ahead.
Okay, sounds good. Amelia, you're a bit muffled. Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you fine.
That sounds perfect now. We got it all figured out.
All right. Making sure it's also not me on my end. So.
Oh, it's all good. It sounds perfect on our end. Okay. So that is fine. So, Amelia, tell us a little bit about yourself before we dive into some of your work.
For sure. So, I am an author, researcher, and storyteller. I'm here in Chicago, and I have been in Chicago since 2008. So I've been working in the realm of paranormal and the publishing for about 18 years now, and the author of seven books, soon to be seven books. Right now, I'm the author of six books, but I like the sound of seven, so I'm practicing that. I also go around to the different events and conferences and podcasts and places that I get invited to talk about haunted history and folklore and spooky stuff. So I'm originally from Maryland, and so I have a lot of Maryland lore knowledge, but most of my research has been here. Most of my adult life has been here in the Midwest. So a lot with Chicago and just the greater Illinois and Wisconsin kind of areas.
Speaking of Wisconsin, I have never done this on the show before, but I actually have just, I have a copy of your book right here on screen with me. I feel like David Letterman showing off the newest.
Yeah.
So you guys can, one of your books that you wrote that I just finished reading, which I thought was an amazing read, is Where the Party Never Ended, which we will get to here shortly. But let's talk about your background in the paranormal a little bit. What got you into the paranormal, Amelia?
So I have been interested in all things spooky since I was a little kid. So I used to go to the library before I could even read and go to what was then the occult section and just look through all of, they had these big coffee table books that were about like aliens and spontaneous combustion and poltergeists and ghosts and anomalies and all kinds of stuff. And I just used to love to look at the pictures. My mom loved scary stuff when I was a kid. So not really paranormal, but more just like scary stories, like Stephen King exorcist kind of books. So she got me into reading, and then she got me into reading scary stuff. And I loved the true, sort of like the true account aspect of like, you know, what's out there and what else is in this world, you know, besides just what we have in suburban Maryland, you know?
Sure. And then you come to Chicago, which is just a hotbed of all paranormal stuff. So it's, you move from one place to another and you're still following the spooky path.
Right. Chicago also just has a really great community of people that are all interested in this and connected with each other. And so that's been wonderful over the years too. I could say more. I'm practicing not talking over, you know, the entire time. So I will keep.
Oh no, I want you to talk the entire time. People get to listen to me talk all the time. You're the star of the show, Amelia.
I did media training for like my regular job, and they're like, you know, keep it, you know, short snippets, real brief, like just little pithy kind of answers. And so then I was like, crap, should I be doing that like in my real, you know, in these other types of interviews? But yeah, no, I could go on and on, but yeah.
So what is your favorite paranormal story from childhood that you remember?
Oh, goodness. So something that happened to me or just kind of in general or
something, maybe that happened to you. What was your first encounter in the paranormal?
Sure. So the thing that kicked it all off for me was an encounter that I had when I was 11 years old, exploring an abandoned house in Moncton, Maryland. So my dad worked at a restaurant called the Manor Tavern, which is still around. And there, it was located on this plot of land that had belonged to the third Lord Baltimore, and it was called My Lady's Manor. that he had built for his wife. And it was a huge, this was like horse country. So wealthy people, lots of land, big houses, mansions, things like that. And then you had all these really old houses and inns and taverns that had been there since the mid 1700s. It was built in like 1756. So the restaurant itself had originally been like a stable. And then like I said, there was this sort of smattering of houses around it. Some of them were still occupied. Some of them were long abandoned. And one of them was known locally as Walter's House. And this, it was really interesting. If you would sit on the patio of the restaurant, you could see the house. Like, it was right on the other side of the parking lot. And so we used to drive my dad out to work and pick him up late at night. And I just became fascinated with the house, and I ended up doing a lot of exploring there. I was interested in like ghost hunting. Again, this was like, you know, young kid me in the late 90s. So this was not the internet age. This was me reading books about it and kind of branching out on my own. So I explored the house, and I became fascinated with the story of the ghost that people called Walter. I think they just referred to every ghost on the property as Walter. And I really grew to have a love for the house as well as the story of the ghost, you know, sort of thinking about like, who are these people that lived here a long time ago? There was lots of objects, trash in the house, things that had been left there over the course of decades and decades. And for me, it was just so fascinating and really cool. And I kept wishing that I would see the ghost. And I did. One day when I was leaving with my mom and a friend from middle school named Graham, we were driving away. On the other side of the house, there was like a little guardrail. It was only about 6 or 8 feet from the road, York and Hess Road, for anybody who may happen to be listening or ever does listen that knows Moncton, Maryland, but right at that intersection there. So we were pulling away very slowly. You could see through the trees up to the house. And then in one of the attic windows, there was like a young man leaning out of the window, looking down at us. And he was completely white. And he had no face, but not in a spooky sort of vacuous, horrifying way, just kind of like a doll, like one of those like Amish dolls that's just kind of has like a blank expression, like nothing there. And I could tell that he was dressed in old fashioned clothing, like period clothing, like maybe like what a stable boy might wear. And his head turned and watched us. And the other interesting thing about him was, even though he was completely white, he still had like sort of like there was detail, like it was different shades of white depending on like the where his shirt sort of like gathered at the cuffs and his collar and his hair. He had curly hair. I mean, I remember this so well. So his head turned as we were driving away. My mom didn't see. She was driving very slowly, enough for me and Graham to get a really good look. We drove just past it. She offered to back up, basically. And I said, no. I said, I don't want you to back up, because if we back up and he's still there, I think then I'll be scared. You know, I was exhilarated. I had like that static electricity feeling that you get sort of like in your stomach or that comes over you when you have like a paranormal encounter. And then I thought, if he's not there anymore, then I'll doubt what I saw. And so I was just elated by this. This was a really cool experience, not something some people are come to the paranormal from, like a terrifying experience. Mine was really wonderful. It was like a coming of age kind of story, this fascination I had with this house. And the other thing to note about where he was standing, there was actually a floor there. So it's like one of those, you know, there's a lot of houses like this on the East Coast, these historic houses that have those like colonial windows that look like eyes. And the floor was built straight up to where the window level was. So you would have to, if you were a living person, you'd have to lie down on your stomach in order to look out the window. But he was very clearly standing up, with his hands on the window, so leaning out the window. But anyway, so I've never experienced anything like that again. I've had really interesting experiences, really wild experiences, but I've never seen like a full body apparition again. And I don't know if I would have quite the same reaction. You know, then I was like, wow, that was awesome, right? It was like seeing like, I'm old now, so I go bird watching, right? When you see an awesome bird, you're like, wow. You know, and so it was kind of like that feeling, whereas now I'm, you know, I have a little more anxiety, and maybe full body apparition wouldn't be the thing that that would get me going in the way that it did when I was a kid. And so I love that experience and remembering the way it made me feel too. Excited about the world, you know.
Sure, that's a great story, and I appreciate the way you described it as a coming of age kind of a deal. Because as you said, most ghost stories come from a place, like original or origin stories, if you will, always come from a place of fear. You never hear of somebody's like, my first ghost story was something positive.
Right. Yeah, it's, and I've certainly had some experiences that were scary too. And as well as when I was a kid. So I definitely appreciate that. Like, but for me, it definitely came from more of a place of fascination and longing. So growing up being this lonely girl, you know, suburban cookie cutter, Maryland, being excited about the mysteries of the world and the mysteries of life and what else, you know, what else is out there, and getting me hyped about history and everything. So it was a great experience.
Excellent. So you come to Chicago afterwards, and you're here now, and you're writing books, you're a talking head on TV. How does one get from a coming of age paranormal encounter to becoming this big paranormal superstar that you are now?
Thank you. I PayPal'd him $10 to say that before the show.
Yeah, the check cleared, by the way, folks.
Oh, good. So that's interesting, because it's been a very strange pathway. I wanted to be a children's book writer, and I wanted to get into writing and publishing. And, you know, it's a very children's publishing especially is a very unforgiving world. And it was especially around like the 2010s when I moved to Chicago and decided I was going to do all this professionally, right? Like, oh, I'm going to live my dream to move to the big city and become an author. And so, I got into publishing. I did some work with some some educational publishers and stuff like that. And all the while I was writing ghost stories, but thinking that not thinking that it would become like a true paranormal thing, that it would sweep me into this. But then I did end up, I self-published in 2010, a book called This House, which actually recounts the story of my relationship with Walter and Walter's house. That was like a middle grade, you know, book for younger people. It was kind of like a work of fiction, but with a narrative that follows like the true story and everything. And it ended up, because also when I moved here, I was still interested in ghosts and ghost hunting and paranormal stuff. So I was joining, like, there was like the Chicago Ghost Hunters Group meetup at the time. I don't even know if meetup still exists, but it was big then. And so I was meeting a lot of people in the paranormal community. That book just sort of went straight into the paranormal community's interest, especially around, you know, between like, I don't know, whatever, 2010, 2012, 15. That was like the big boom of like paranormal on TV. And it just like the pop culture moment kind of happened. And so my book ended up gaining traction with people that liked the true paranormal accounts and were into paranormal investigation and ghost hunting, not the 10 to 12 year old set that I thought was going to be reading this book. Or actually, really, I thought like my parents, you know, were going to be the only ones who ever read the book. So that is when I was like, well, this is what I'm doing now. I started getting invited onto radio programs and local conferences and events and stuff like that. And I was like, let's do it. Let's rock. And so then I really found my momentum, like loving just being like a ghost storyteller. I was like, this is it. This is the dream. So kind of sort of a weird pathway, but never looked back.
That's amazing. I wanted to touch base on the children's book writer, because somebody goes from wanting to write children's books to paranormal books. And I think that's the most clever, the most clever turnaround I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, I don't. So I didn't know diddly squat when I started. So this isn't like people are like, what's your advice on becoming a writer? And I was like, I don't know, especially not now in like the world of social media and everything. But like I had all of like the Amazon keywords in the book title, right? The book was called Big House, The True Story of a Girl and a Ghost. I titled it that because it sounded cool to me. It just happened to be like, okay, it picked up on like Amazon's algorithm of this, that, and the other. So it like took off on Amazon. And I didn't really anticipate any of that. The first book that I ever wrote that had a contract was Breakfast with Bigfoot, which is for 3 to 6 year olds. And that stars Bigfoot, but it's about like safe, you know, hiking principles, wilderness principles for youngsters. But it also is like a retelling of the Albert Ostman story, which is like the nice. I'm like, okay, I'm going to and infuse my sort of like true, like, you know, this historical story or account or whatever it may be of this Bigfoot encounter from 1924. But I've thought, you know, I'm just going to have fun with it. I didn't really expect to be perceived. I wanted to be an author and like have fun and have everybody love me and think I'm great, but I didn't expect to be perceived. So I was like, I'm just going to do whatever dorky thing that I want to do. And then it ended up working out.
You have a book called Breakfast with Bigfoot, and I want to point out that it is one of the most clever titles I have ever heard from a children's book ever. I love that name.
There was supposed to be Snack Time with Sasquatch and Spaghetti with the Yeti as two follow-ups, but, you know, that publisher funded that illustrator. So the illustrator of the book, Charles Swinford, and the illustrations are adorable, probably made off with more money than I'll ever make from the royalties on the book, just by virtue of his like upfront payment for the illustrations, just because of how the business works. And I was like, well, can't afford him again. Like, we're not, you know, like I worked with a different publisher after that. And so maybe one day, you know, we'll see the parts 2 and 3 of this Bigfoot saga. But thank you. It took a village of people who had a lot of fun, quirky ideas to make that all come together.
That's amazing. I love all of those names. Now, if you were to, sorry, folks, we're still dealing with some tech issues, but oh, they can't see you. Okay. I thought you were being picked up on. Our studio engineer is currently looking at it in bed, and the poor guy is trying to figure out situations.
That's funny. I can see him. Can people see me, or am I just a voice?
You're a voice at the moment, Amelia. I am so sorry.
That's okay. I can make all sorts of hand gestures and things.
It's okay. People tell me if they tied my hands together, I couldn't make a conversation either. So
no, I'm really, I'm bad. Yeah.
So what was your first paranormal investigation where you had like equipment and you were all ready to go? Tell us about your first paranormal investigation.
Oh boy, what a great. So I do have, so that there's two answers to that question. One, when I was in high school, with my high school pals who were also into spooky stuff, we actually snuck into Pennhurst way before it was cool, right? So this would have been years before people were having events there and investigations and formal whatevers. It was still, part of it was still being used by the military, but the rest was like heavily abandoned. That's Pennhurst, a state school in Pennsylvania, an asylum. I think there's different names for it. And so we went with our flashlights and probably I don't even think we had digital recorders, just our tape recorders and cameras and stuff. And we got lost in that place for hours, and we had so much fun. I remember our friend just pulled his car right up in front of it because it was so overgrown that I remember the the little roundabout in front where the original entrance was so overgrown that he was able to park his car there. And if you walked like 20 feet away, you couldn't see the car because it was, you know, it was just hidden there. So we just walked right in and explored, which was one of the coolest things ever. And then when I moved to Chicago and got hooked up with the Chicago Ghost Hunters group, that's when I started to meet people who were really serious about the gadgets and the equipment and the style and the presentation and the rules and the regulations of ghost hunting and everything. And I think my very first one that I did, and none of these were legal. It was a bit before I got into doing it above board, but we went to Manteno and Bachelor's Grove at night.
Ooh.
Yeah. So now I'm a married woman with a full-time job, so I can't be trespassing and breaking the law and everything, but I'm glad I did when I had the chance.
Oh, Amelia, nothing's stopping you now. Full-time jobs and marriage. Psh.
That's true. I guess, if I got arrested, I could probably call my boss and be like, let me level with you. I need you to bail me out.
I'm going
to
call your boss too.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yes. He'd be hip to that. So
what was your adventure like in Bachelor's Grove?
It was pretty crazy. We saw, I kid you not, the Phantom Lights.
No kidding.
And this was before, again, so I'm like brand new to all of this, soaking it all in like a sponge, just really hyped and excited to be doing all of this. And I didn't know, I knew some of the stories and the lore, but I didn't know about the Phantom House and I didn't know about the Phantom Lights. And the Phantom Lights acted exactly as they do in everybody's story. It was incredible. So we were exploring the cemetery, and it was kind of, I would say, a large group of us. There was maybe 10 people that had come in like different cars, all kind of scattered exploring. And I just remember one or two of us looking up into the trees from the cemetery back towards the trail that leads you out and back to the road. And in the trees, I saw this glowing light that looked like a window with like soft candlelight coming from inside of this window. And I was like, that's bizarre. And it took shape almost like this rectangular window pane. And I was like, do you see that? You know, the person standing next to me, they were like, I do. And we were like, we got to go check out what that is. And so everybody's kind of like, can tell that we're looking at something. So they all kind of gather in. And in this weird, like, trance-like state, everybody looks up at this light. And then I'm like, what am I looking at? Is it a streetlight? Is it the moon? But of course, it's very thick woods in that little section there. And there's some houses way on the other side, but there's no streetlights. And the moon would have been above us. And no actual house lights right there. So we just kind of followed the lights onto the trail. And just like as described when people talk about it, like almost like an anglerfish, this light that was kind of like dancing through the woods and changing shape and getting bigger and smaller and going up and down. And we just sort of were like walking along the trail, looking at it. And it was so clear that you could still see the branches, like the tree branches in front of it, if that makes sense. Like it was like, it had so much substance and we were like, what are we looking at? And finally, we were back out off the trail, like before we even knew it. I mean, it's a short walk, but still, before we even knew it, we were back off the trail and the light had kind of disappeared. And we're looking up and like, there's the moon way up in the sky. And then, yeah, and that's it. Then we were out of the cemetery and our ride, who was like, I don't know, circling the block, just happened to pull up. And we all got in the car, we all got in the van, and that was it. So that was really cool. And I am glad that I didn't know. I think it was, you know, when I was a kid and I saw Walter and I had that sort of beginner's mind, I don't know everything and I'm open to whatever happens kind of, you know, feeling. And then here at Bachelor's Grove, when I was like, I don't know all the stories, I don't know the lore, there's nothing stopping me from experiencing this. My brain my whatever's not going to shut any of this down. It was like I was totally open to the experience, and then we saw those lights, and it was really cool. And we didn't talk about it until later. We were like, do you guys realize that we all just like stared at these lights and then filed out of the cemetery as if it was just kind of very like gently escorting us off the property.
That's amazing. Now, the next thing I wanted to talk a little bit about is your specialty or one of your favorite places to investigate, and that's the Old Baraboo Inn.
Yeah, so I am an Old Baraboo Inn super fan. I originally was invited to give a talk there, be part of a talk, like a panel talk, with Mary Marshall and Allison Jornlin at the, what is it, World's Largest Ghost Hunt Reveal was going to be there with like Mysterious Adventure Tours. And so I was part of that. And I really just, I had never been to Baraboo. I had never been to Wisconsin Dells. I just fell in love with it. And met with Shelley Wells, who now is like the caretaker of the place. And she's just the coolest, nicest person. And we connected and I just fell in love with the place. She was talking about how, you know, oh, I'd love it if we could get a book written about this place. And, you know, we ended up later filming, both my husband, Jonathan, and I filming for the Travel Channel there for an episode of Hometown Horror. And I started working with Shelley on the book, and so I just have this longtime love of that place and of Baraboo. I've written about Baraboo now as well, and I go there like maybe twice a year. Quick plug, I'm going there in June for another Mysterious Adventure Tours event. So Nick and Tessa Groff are going to be there on June 6th for a special event. And you can use code Amelia10 for $10 off your ticket on Eventbrite. And if you go to the Old Baraboo Inn Facebook page, it has all the details of and the different types of tickets and stuff you can get. There's going to be activities there throughout the day. I'll be there giving a short presentation and selling books and stuff like that as well on the evening of Saturday, June 6th. So I'm really excited about that. And my next book that is coming out is going to be the second book of Old Baraboo Inn story. So it's going to be Party On, More Ghosts of the Old Baraboo Inn. So again, like Shelley, 5 years ago, the first OBI book came out, and Shelley and I were talking again about how so much has happened there in those last 5 years, with the history and the town and people's experiences. It would be great to have another book. And I was like, oh no, twist my arm. So it'll be two books now. I'm really excited about this place. And the cool thing about the Old Baraboo Inn is it's an interactive haunting with very highly intelligent spirits who are very playful and there's an emotional center to the hauntings. And it's very neat. And every time you go there, you have an experience and you really feel, it's a place that you really feel in your gut. So I love it.
That's fascinating. Amelia, can you still hear me? We're still fighting gremlins. Excellent. That's good.
Yes. Yes.
So no what problem. Is, tell us a little bit about the history of the Baraboo Inn.
So the cornerstone of the building has it built in 1864, but the structure itself is a little bit older. Before that, there was a house on that property. Now, this whole part of town in Baraboo, in the Southside Commercial District, was the commercial brewing area. So Baraboo is famous for being Circus City. It was the home and winter quarters of the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. So the Ringling Brothers are from there. That's what it was famous for, but it was also a hub of the Wisconsin beer brewing industry. So it attracted a lot of immigrants, a lot of German immigrants who had breweries and tasting rooms in town there. So that area of town was kind of the seedy part of town where all the breweries and were sort of relegated to. Now, in 1876, the Old Baraboo Inn opened as the Bender House, which was like a boarding house that was adjacent to the the railroad depots. There's a railroad depot there that also opened in 1876 that went between like Chicago and Minneapolis. So this was a stop off. People imagine, you know, people stopping train life, right, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and travel. A lot of folks coming and going, and so it became, so the old Baraboo Inn, which again at the time was the Bender House, became sort of like this hub of people coming and going. And they had a brewery there, they had the boarding house, and later into the 20th century it was rumored as well that it was a brothel. And I think what was probably a brothel, or if it was a brothel, it would have been one as well in the late 1800s and turn of the century. But the Prohibition era, they were also, there were a lot of places in Baraboo that were brewing all sorts of things illegally, as there were everywhere. But the old Baraboo was supposed to have been one of those places as well, and that it was still being used for other illicit activities. And then it was kind of like a series of different restaurants and pubs throughout time. It suffered a few interesting fires. One of them was a devastating fire. Nobody died, but it really gutted the building. And after that, in the late 90s, that is when B.C. Farr, who was the owner of what the old Baraboo Inn is today, he bought it and did like a complete renovation on the building, and then opened it as like a bar and grill. And throughout the process of those renovations is when he discovered that it was very haunted, and when the hauntings kind of, woke up, which happens a lot, you know, during building renovations and things like that. And so then kind of slowly over time, first he was kind of like begrudging about it, And then he fully embraced it. And then they lean into it completely. But seeing it as a haunted place and a haunted location and a place to experience, they do living history there, but it really is a place to come have a paranormal experience safely.
I like to hear that. Now, Amelia, we have, because we are live radio, and when it wants to work, it works. We have a Bob, caller on the line.
Well, it's me, Bob.
Oh, my gosh.
First, it's me, Pound Panic. So, yes, thank you, Chuck Pullen, by the way. Bob saw me. I'm running all around the studio trying to fix. We could hear you fine, Amelia, but the screen is kind of like being temperamental. But I am back sitting at the desk. That means I can monitor phone calls now. So 219-845-1100, 219-845-1100. If you called up, I'm sorry I didn't get to you, but call back again. I think we got a caller on the line, so we'll try talking to them and see what happens here. So let's see if this works, Bob. And I know we got another caller behind him, it looks like. So caller, you're on the air.
Oh, it's going well. I can't hear you. Okay. Oh, geez. What's wrong, Kyle?
That might be a problem, too. I can't hear the phone line as well.
Hang in there, caller. Amelia, this has been such an exciting episode, I'll tell you. We've had calling issues, camera issues. These things never happen. So I must not have said, we do broadcast out of a haunted studio, so I'm assuming that that we're just dealing with some gremlins, or there's a ghost in the wires, if you will. So,
yeah.
Caller, we apologize, but I don't think we're going to get you on the air this week, but I'd like it if you'd be able to call back next week. All right, Count, you want to... One moment, folks. In the meantime, Amelia, while we're dealing with the phone call situation, why don't you tell us a bit about your some of the other paranormal books you've written over your career?
For sure. So I have also written Maryland Ghosts, Paranormal Encounters in the Free State. So that is a collection of people's true paranormal accounts, obviously in the state of Maryland. There's a lot of different types of stories in there. Some of them are cryptids, UFOs, ghost stories. Maryland has such a rich history. We've got revolutionary history. We've got Civil War history. Lots of the Native and Indigenous history that's been preserved, all sorts of cool stuff. We've got military bases, major cities, right, all, you know, converging on one another, and all these different landscapes. So I had a really good time writing that and compiling that. So doing a lot of the history, haunted history, folklore, and then folding in people's personal experiences into that. And so I got to collect a lot of family stories along the way with that as well. And the other books are, I also wrote a poetry book. I do other things besides write spooky stuff. It is called Apparitions, and it has like a, you know, a theme, but it's a book of poetry about trauma. So if you're in the mood for something different, but and then last year I wrote, I was asked, a horror film director reached out to me and asked me to do a short form novelization of his short film called Rough Cut. That's going to be made into a feature film this year. It's filming, I think, later this year. And so that is called, what is it called? The House of Mr. Cackle, a rough cut short story. And that was my first. So all of my books, not to toot my own horn, have been, you know, Amazon bestsellers and stuff, but this one went to number one. And so I'm excited about that. And it was a really cool experience too. I got to do something a little different and get into actual horror fiction versus the true paranormal, which is my passion.
That's still really cool. I appreciate that a horror film maker reached out to you to do a short form. That's so cool.
Me too. It was wild. I got into horror last year with some of the research that I was working on. So I was part of there was an academic conference in England dedicated to Terrifier. And so I applied, you know, I had to send an abstract and be very serious. And I did all this diligent research about like the history of killer clowns,
yeah.
Which was really cool. Yes. I just, if I can have fun with it, right, I will. And so I did. So I kind of got into horror a little bit. I mean, I'm into horror, but like dipped my toe into that with the other stuff that I do as like researcher and storyteller. And I think, you know, through all of these different connections that I made, I ended up connecting with this director. So it was super cool. Super, super cool.
Should we try it again, Bob?
Excellent. Amelia, we're going to try this caller thing one more time.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Do we have a caller on the line count?
Let's try it. Hello? Hello.
Caller, you're on the air.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have John call. Sorry about that, caller. John, if you're listening, I'm going to take your call right now. It'll be a great test subject.
Nothing like testing it out 10 minutes before
the show. If you could test it out there.
Amelia, it is...
have them text their questions.
Texting questions. We do have the YouTube live channel going on right now, folks. So if you tune in on YouTube and you would like to ask Amelia a question, make sure you shoot us a...
Let's try John here. I think this is John. Let's try and make sure... John, are you there? Hello? Yeah, I can't hear anything.
Okay, we're going to
sorry about that, John.
Count. No more phone calls for the evening.
It's,
let's finish up the rest of the...
ghost calls.
Yes, we'll take ghost calls.
Or it's prank calls. If the caller is Jamie or Pete, just hang up on them. We already know.
Yeah, Chuck, I don't know what's wrong with that one.
So let's talk a little bit about a project that you're speaking of, Pete. You have a project you're working on right now that I don't know how much you can share about it, but I do know that the first episode's available to be watched. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit about History Alive.
Yes. So, oh my gosh, what a journey that's been. So yeah, History Alive is currently airing on Paraflix. It is what it is now, is sort of like an hour long sort of I guess like documentary premiere that chronicles a group of us that came together to do some... there's paranormal investigation, there's a lot of storytelling within, and then there's a lot of history. So the paranormal is sort of like secondary to that. And we went and explored some different sites in Indiana and Kentucky, two of which, one of which is now gone, has been torn down. and another that just recently closed. So it's so important. These were in Fowler, Indiana. The Fowler Theater just recently closed and needs help. There are lots of ways to get involved in volunteering and trying to help preserve this historic theater in Fowler, Indiana. And then the other one was the old Benton County Jail there, which was torn down. And so it was really, it's important to preserve history. We all know that. And I think a lot of ghost hunters sort of have that phrase on repeat, But in this case, we were able to chronicle the history and the visuals, just the spectacular, just the interiors of these places, their stories and their ghost stories before, before it's too late. So, and the third place that we went to was the Jonesville Rest Home in Jonesville, Kentucky, which is recently closed. It was a working rest home for people with various mental and physical disabilities. And I think it closed in like 2022, 23, and everybody was able to be put into other homes. And these are places where they can come and go. It's not like a hospital situation, and they receive like assisted living care and everything. But very haunted place. Very interesting also to be in a place that is freshly, like not abandoned, but like freshly not working anymore, if that makes sense. We also did some stuff. We did some stuff at other places too. I went to Crown Point Jail with these folks.
Oh, it's one of Cal
Just
Panics
a
and mine's favorite places to
yeah,
investigate.
just a great group of people. I really think that like when you do ghost hunting or paranormal investigation, it really hinges on the people that you're with, bringing out the best in you and also the location, and what a just a really, really great group of folks to work with.
We have you can hear me right
I can hear you,
as long as somebody hears me out
Amelia.
there.
You can hear our lovely producer,
I
can't you?
can hear,
Well, we're all
yes.
hearing each other. That's great. Windstorm, I guess Windstorm was on hold for 15 minutes, but he heard me and Chuck, our Chuck, trying to direct me how to fix this Zoom and phone line. So I'm sure that was entertaining for Windstorm there. Also, let's see. C. Wagner 99. I've been to that Fowler, that theater in Fowler. It's very cool. So thank you, C. Wagner 99, for that. Is that the C?
I
I think
see.
that's our C. Wagner, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Christina? Christina? I can't see the picture. Also, John did text in. John did text in as well. I know a couple people in the comments were missing the phone call, but he did text and did have a question for Amelia. How long ago did you see Walter in that house, and is that house still there?
So that was in 1997. And the house is no longer there. The house was torn down in 1998.
Okay.
And so I was able to see it right after. It was very eerie, just a couple of months after they tore it down. It was just a perfectly manicured grassy lawn. It was really interesting having the house there and then not there anymore. And a few years ago, right before the COVID shutdown, I took a trip with Jonathan out there to see it again, and they have since then opened like an equestrian hospital there, which was very fitting since it's horse country, which is a thing. That's a thing in Baltimore County, and then the restaurant is still there, and that burnt to the ground, and they rebuilt it. And then one of the other abandoned houses is also gone, and then one of the houses that was lived in at the time that I was a kid is now abandoned and looks just like Walter's house. And so that was really kind of interesting to see too, just in my lifetime, but yeah, so the house unfortunately is not there. The whole area is quite haunted though. The restaurant is haunted, so if people are in and around there and they want to go check it out, there's certainly a lot to see.
Perfect. That's
Yeah.
absolutely
Thanks for
amazing.
answering that there.
Yeah, thank
Yeah.
you. We appreciate texting questions, folks. If you know how to text in a question, we still have a few minutes left in the show. We'll go in a little bit of overtime here because we That was a good way to kick off the show. Count Panic, nothing like keeping us on our toes.
I know. We'll have to figure out. We'll have to call the president of Zoom and figure out.
I think it's the president. We have to give a quick shout out to studio engineer Chuck. He did his best through bedtime. So thank you, Chuck. We really appreciate it.
He'll be getting a call at 6 a.m. for the morning producer now.
They're not going to call me. They could call you at 6 a.m.
Oh, man.
He'll call them.
Amelia, you're working on something new, and I don't know if you can talk about this at all yet, but when I met you at the Obscura Paracon, you had a puppet with you.
Yes.
Are you allowed to talk about that or no?
I am allowed to talk about the puppet.
Oh my goodness, thank you. Because this was...
Yes.
I couldn't stop laughing. There's a great selfie of Northwest Indiana Paranormal, me, Pete Casey, and Amelia, and there's a puppet. And there's a significance behind it. So can you talk about the puppet?
I can. So yes, the executive producer behind this project is in fact Jonathan. So he thumbs up in, you know, support of talking about it. But so Ground Chuck is everybody's favorite marmot of the Midwest. Of course, he is the storytelling, history, and ghost story puppet. And we are extremely popular YouTube channel that I think has 250 followers. So please go add to that. But we've been doing Amelia's Spooky Story Boutique on YouTube for a while. Some of me doing my boring talking, and then a lot of Chuck doing a lot of haunted history and 1 minute mysteries and interviewing people. Chuck's origin story. Chuck was a childhood puppet that Jonathan had. Chuck was actually featured on America's Funniest Home Videos in, like, I don't know, 1992, meeting the president at the time. The president was Clinton. This used to be a much funnier, more heartwarming story, but now it's kind of like, ugh, nobody wants to talk about any of these people. But he did meet President Clinton. And Jonathan just, you know, Jonathan has done puppeteering. Jonathan's done professional puppeteering, for another show, with musician Ralph Covert. And so anyway, as part of this, I swear this is going to go somewhere. This is going to make sense. Just part of our journey, getting back in touch with our childhood selves, thinking of some fun, cool, interesting things that we can do and work on together. Jonathan found Ground Chuck. He found the puppet and was reunited with him. And we were like, let's do something with Chuck. And so that is how we decided to, there's one other puppet that does like true crime, but there's no puppets yet. And if there are, you'll know that they are copying us. No other puppets that are doing, that have the haunted history angle sort of captured there. And it's all done, of course, tastefully, even though we cover some dark subject matter and everything. But so Chuck, Ground Chuck, and I are going to have our own podcast that is called Spooky Story Boutique. And that is also going to be on Paraflix, and that is coming out in just a couple of short weeks. So I can't announce the date yet officially, but like I will start actually this week, I'm going to start to tease things out more, but we're going to have our first season coming out at the end of this month or beginning of June. It's going to be a storytelling podcast. So visual podcasts where you can watch or listen. Me actually, I'm going to be reading this house. It's going to be kind of like an audiobook experience as well. And then Chuck will be featured in each episode doing his thing as well. So we're very excited. And Ground Chuck blesses you all with an excellent harvest of wood.
That is absolutely amazing. Count, you hear that?
I hear that.
What do you think about what about us getting a puppet?
We need a puppet. Okay, we got to get a puppet, Bob.
I don't want to copy Amelia, but I'm saying we should get, next time we have a chance, we should have Chuck come on here as a guest. Chuck, me and Chuck, Chuck can sit right here next to me. We could do a whole episode with him.
Is he the puppet?
Yes. He's the puppet. Didn't you just?
Well, I was going to say, why don't we have, like, I'll think, let's workshop it, Bob.
Can we have Chuck as a guest, Amelia?
We'll workshop it out.
Yes. So, yes, we can have Chuck as a guest in the future.
I'm getting our Chucks confused because I still think of...
No, we're talking about the
puppet. I know, but there's too many Chucks.
There are too many...
too many Chucks.
Amelia, tell us a little bit more about where people can find out about your books, you, yourself, where people can watch your whatnots, and... You know, you've been on Travel Channel, you've done all these cool things. So where could people find more about you at?
I have a website, AmeliaCotter.com, that kind of is a central point of everything. And I do, I keep a blog on there too that I write on regularly. There's all sorts of stuff. So poetry, stories, history, research, ghosts, everything is there. All of my upcoming appearances, as well as like where to watch cool stuff. I was on a show called the RIP Files for a couple of seasons as well. Everything that you can watch, you could kind of just find on any streaming service, like through either Amazon, like including Hometown Horror is on Amazon Prime. RIP Files is on Amazon Prime. History Alive is on Paraflix. Spooky Story Boutique will be on Paraflix. Use code. I'm coming at you with another code. Boutique 25, that's BOOTIQUE, I think, 25 for a discount on your subscription so that you can watch and love and learn. And what else? And some other documentaries and stuff that I've been in as well. Those are all available on Amazon. You can find them through my website. You can find me on the socials at Amelia M. Cotter, M as in murder. And that's going to be Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
That is fantastic. Now, one thing I always make my guests do at the end of the show, Amelia, is I usually make them do a quip, a piece of advice, a riddle, a joke, or something to exit out the show with. What do you have for our audience?
Oh God, I would probably go with something heartwarming, you know, a piece, maybe like a little piece of life advice. Should I say it now? Or
yeah, no, ready? That's what we got it.
Okay. Well, I guess I have to think of it. No, I would. I don't know. Life is short, so get out there and do the thing and enjoy the day. Find joy in the day. Love and hug your friends and your loved ones, and appreciate every moment.
That is such
I'll say.
That's a good one, Cal.
Good one. I like that
I'm
one.
I'm going to rank that one up as one of our best quips we've ever gotten.
Put it up there. Put it up there.
Guest. Oh, yay.
Amelia, despite all the technical difficulties we've had tonight, you've been such an amazing guest, and we can't thank you enough for coming on.
Of course. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, fantastic.
Cal, do you have any closing words for Amelia before we call it
quits? Amelia, thank you so much for being on here today. Tonight, I should
thank
say.
Thank you.
And
yes,
Bob.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Okay, so I have some really
it's a show. Why wouldn't he be here?
I have some really exciting news, everybody. And Amelia gets to be here because I get to break the news here. Next week's guest on our show is going to be Chris Fleming.
Woohoo!
From Psychic Kids, A&E Psychic Kids. He's been on countless things as talking head on all paranormal stuff. So Chris Fleming will be on the show next week. So that's pretty amazing. And Amelia, you have been such a great guest, and we appreciate you.
Yay. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Thank you, Amelia. Folks,
thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark on behalf of me, Count
Panic.
Well,
wait, now you got to give me a little time, Bob, because Amelia, I'm going to say goodbye. Okay. I got to turn off that Zoom first and foremost. Thank you, Amelia.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
End the meeting there.
All right.
Okay, let me take this down. Now, I think you're still... I just got to do this housekeeping, Bob.
No problem. Can I do my exit now?
Yeah, but I don't know if I'll be able to turn the stream off. So keep talking about some stuff as well. Just keep talking. Hold on.
All right, folks. So next week we have Chris Fleming on. Week after that, I believe we have a psychic healer coming on. So that's pretty amazing.
Okay.
We have a whole line of guests.
There
coming.
We go.
It's been pretty great. It's, are we good to exit now?
Yeah. Checking the thing. Goodbye, everybody. Oh, wait. Time out here. Spooky auto Mimi Annabelle. She commented Annabelle back on the dolls, puppets and whatnot. She was really a puppet, but a doll, right?
Yeah.
Windstorm thanks Bob in panic. Windstorm likes the beer. By God, shave it soon, I think. Give me a paper bag. I can make you one right now, says C. Wagner. Also, I'm hoping I get this right. Cradinelli says it's Dan Aykroyd's birthday.
Happy birthday, Dan Aykroyd. How'd I miss that?
This is your chance now. Do another thing while we...
There's a $10,000 bounty out right now to get Dan Aykroyd on Bob After.
Okay, I'm glad you clarified
that. No, there is really
a $10,000 bounty. Yeah, I know, but you said a bounty for him. I didn't find the show.
To get on the show, there is a $10,000 bounty to get Dan Aykroyd on Bob After Dark.
Okay.
That's a real amount of money, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So can we close the episode
out? Yeah. Let me pull that spooky music back up again.
All right.
So folks, go ahead, Bob. Do your
thing. Thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we just want to wish all of you sweet dreams. To my mom, happy belated Mother's Day. I hope you had a good time hanging out in the cemeteries yesterday. Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who want are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.